So we're honored to have on Iron Sports Lawrence Epstein. He's the chief operating officer of the UFC. And we're so excited about UFC 299 in the Kaseya Center coming up next weekend. Lawrence, thanks for coming on Iron Sports.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, boy, you got a really great lineup coming here. UFC 299, O'Malley versus Vera 2. You have Poirier's fighting also. Good, nice, deep card. And it's really great to come back here to Miami.
Yeah, no, we're really excited to be back. I mean, 299 is a absolutely stacked card. So couldn't be more excited to bring that event to Miami. And we're going to sell the place out again and just put on an incredible show.
You know, the one thing about the UFC is different. I was talking to somebody who's like an old-time boxing fan in his 80s, and he goes, I love the UFC. And I go, because I love it because the cards, it used to be what boxing used to be. He used to go to like the Blue Horizon and all these places even down in Miami, and you're like, there's 10 bouts, and every bout is going to be good and exciting. And that's what UFC is. You have everyone. It's not just a headliner card, and everyone shows up at whatever, 12 o'clock at night. It's the whole night has really good bouts with big names, so that's what makes it so cool.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at this main card with, of course, headlined by, you know, Sean O'Malley and Chito Vera. But then the co-main of Dustin Poirier and St. Denis is going to be, you know, a crazy fight. And then you've got this super interesting matchup with Kevin Holland and Michael Page. And it just keeps going. I mean, the whole card, you know, from top to bottom is a home run.
And the one thing about the UFC is the international component. So many, it really is like the Olympic sport in terms of, I don't know what country doesn't compete in terms of having a fighter in UFC or have, you know, wanting to fight in UFC. It is really this great international component. And considering that Miami is such an international city, you know, it's just perfect for everything.
Yeah. I mean, the main card, I think it's got like China, Russia, Brazil, Australia, England, of course, the US, and, Cheetos from Ecuador, and French and France. I mean, so it's just an incredibly, you know, diverse international card. It's perfect for a city like Miami, where there's people from all over the world.
Yeah, now last year, I think you said you haven't been here for 20 years. You come back and UFC 287, and it attracted, of course, sold out crowd. The gate was, I was shocked at these numbers. 11.9 million was the highest grossing event ever in Kaseya Center history and the sixth highest grossing event in UFC history. And it was just like, in terms of the economic impact of the city, almost 50 million in economic impact. And I was surprised that almost three of the four buyers are outside of the Miami area. So you had people, you know, coming in, staying at the hotels, all those things that made this such a huge event and, you know, creating jobs and wages and everything like that. But I think that was what's so cool. Those numbers are that it really was this huge event for just not South Florida, but also Southeast. People flew in from New York and the Northeast too for the event.
Yeah, absolutely. And in addition to all that, you know, bringing people down to South Florida, enjoying all the great stuff that's going on there. That event was sent, you know, around the world, reaching almost a billion homes. And of course, as part of the broadcast, we're integrating in all the great stuff that's going on in Miami and South Florida, which is an important tourist destination. All those people in those billion homes around the world are watching all the cool, awesome things that are happening in South Florida. And that marketing, that exposure, you know, is really impactful to tourism based economies like the one you got in South Florida.
I mean, you compared it almost to the time you went to New York when you would try to, for the first time you ever were in New York in terms of an event, it actually had that same type of impact and notoriety. And I'm so excited for this one because now it's the second one, but that's pretty cool that it's actually was one of your best events outside Vegas.
Absolutely. And we fully anticipate, you know, we'll set a new record this year, at 299.
You know, one thing is I was just in Las Vegas for the Super Bowl, and I know you sit on the boards, the Las Vegas Stadium Authority and everything, and we talk about what in Miami in terms of the stadiums have been built and the impact in terms of sports to the city, and it's certainly happening in Vegas and in Miami, very similar in terms of stadiums being built to, you know, being upgraded and with F1 coming here and the tennis moving to Fort Lauderdale, all those different things create, you know, the two cities that have it besides Austin is for F1 is Miami and Vegas. Just talk a little about the impact you see that sports has on the economy and the cities.
Well, I mean, you know, listen, sports has an important impact on all cities. You know, there's so much sporting activity, you know, that's happening. It starts with youth sports, there's college sports, and of course, all the various professional leagues and professional organizations out there. But markets like Las Vegas, where you're at the Super Bowl, and markets like South Florida that have a significant amount of their economy based on tourism, they disproportionately benefit from all this great sporting activity. Miami, you know, as I said, is an important tourist destination for the United States and frankly for the entire world. And so when you put together, you know, these great tourist destinations, they've got great hotels, they've got nightclubs, they've got incredible restaurants and beaches and all that stuff. And you infuse into it, you know, first-class sporting events, there's a synergistic effect there. And it's more impactful in places like Miami and Las Vegas than it is, you know, in places like Kansas City. So, you know, these sporting events have become really, really important parts of this tourism engine. And as we see here in Las Vegas, you know, people from around Canada, for example, are coming in to watch their home team play the Golden Knights. The same is true of the Raiders. Many times we got 50% of the people in the stadium are from other teams. And that's good. That's exactly what Las Vegas wants. And Miami is very similar to that, where people, you know, from around the country and around the world are going to go to sporting events because they want to enjoy all the stuff that South Florida's got to offer.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's so cool, I think, about in terms of what you're trying to do with the UFC is that eventually, and you really almost met that level, is that teams, cities around, not just in America, but around the world are demanding, we want to have a UFC numbered event or a fight night event or some event in our city. This is important, and it's not just going to be that night. It's going to be the pre, everything around it and everything, you know, very much like how teams, you know, cities fight for Super Bowls and fight for NBA All-Star games and those things like that. So it's, you're really reaching that level where people desperately want every city wants a UFC event in their town.
Absolutely. And, you know, listen, we're in a great position because we're only doing, you know, 42 events per year. So there's a real scarcity factor to the UFC product. And, you know, we've got tourism authorities and local municipalities and state governments and countries that are, you know, rolling out the red carpet for us, providing tons of incentives for us to bring the UFC show to their market. And, you know, it's a great position for us to be in.
Yeah, you've been at the UFC since, I think, 2007 in terms of working with there. And in terms of the growth, I mean, it hasn't been easy. I mean, people look at the UFC now as like, oh, this dominant brand and everyone knows everybody and stuff like that. But you really had to build it almost from scratch, combination of acquiring organizations and getting even licensed in New York and those places. I mean, it's pretty amazing to think that a sports league could break in this time and day and age, you know, when there's so much sports, it seems like, and become this one top league. It's pretty amazing all the work you put in to create that, to actually grow the brand.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually been involved since 2001 when Frank and Lorenzo Fertitta and Dana White bought the company, but worked as a lawyer to sort of help them immediately after the acquisition took place and became full-time, as you noted, in 2007. It's been an incredible journey, and we've absolutely, you know, built a sport essentially from scratch. You know, it started with this whole legislative process that you alluded to of getting the sport accepted and legalized. We did that initially in the United States, ultimately passing legislation that either expanded the purview of existing athletic commissions or created new commissions to regulate the sport. And then we sort of took that show on the road and you know, created a regulatory model to govern the sport in virtually every corner of the globe now. So, you know, we're one of those overnight successes after 5 or 6 or 10 years, maybe even 20 years now. But it's been an incredible journey. It's been a lot of fun to be part of it. It's been a lot of work. You know, I said we continue to keep that whole, you know, disruptor mindset. We've still got that chip on our shoulder. And that's why, you know, I believe we continue to lead the world of sport in many ways. I mean, just one example, and Dana White's been, our president, has been incredibly vocal and excited about our upcoming event on September 14th at the Sphere in Las Vegas. We are going to be the first organization in the world of sport to do a live sporting event at the Sphere to take advantage of that incredible technology and that unique setting. And, you know, I don't think we would be doing stuff like that if we didn't continue to embody this, you know, this sort of this disruptor ethos, the spirit of, you know, we're going to be first. We're going to lead. And, you know, it's been incredibly successful for the UFC, and it's been personally really fun to be part of.
And look, during COVID, when all the other sports shut down, didn't have a plan, didn't know how to handle it, you were one of the first sports besides, I think, NASCAR that came back and said, we're going to do events, and you came up with Fight Island and the testing and just the aggressiveness. You came in and gave product and something you could watch on television. I think that was tremendous for you to be on that TV when there was nothing else going on and baseball's negotiating and how they're going to do things. You just went right back and started having fights on a Fight Island, which I thought was a great name for a place, but so it was pretty cool that you were able to come back from the COVID so fast.
Yeah, no, I mean, the first day the governor of Nevada told us we had to go home, you know, Dana just said, we got to figure this out. We got to be the first sport back in action. Let's start working on a plan right now to figure this out. And that's exactly what we did. We put together a game plan, you know, ultimately sort of culminated with Fight Island in Abu Dhabi. And you know, we were the first sport back, and it really, really, you know, was transformative to our brand, to our athletes, and to our business. I mean, for 5 or 6 weeks, we were the only game in town. It was us and Korean baseball. Love Korean baseball, but I like UFC better, a lot better. And, you know, ultimately, you know, fans that of sport that had nothing to watch, you know, many of them maybe weren't UFC fans. They checked out a product, they liked it, and they stuck with us. And we've seen, you know, how that's really, you know, significantly increased our fan base, not just in the United States, but around the world. So, you know, that's just another example of this, you know, nothing's going to stop us type of a mentality. We're going to, of course, be thoughtful, of course, be responsible, but as we call it, continue to be thoughtfully aggressive in everything that we do.
And one of the other things is in 2013, I was in Vegas at the T-Mobile Center, whatever it was called then, is when Ronda Rousey was against Misha Tate. And when Rousey came out and during that whole match, I have been to like Duke, Carolina, and I've been to LeBron James coming back to Cleveland. And people say, what's the loudest event you've been to? I go, that Rousey match had to be. And I'm like, I'm watching women. I can't believe in women's sports. And I love tennis. So I love, you see Serena and Venus and that excitement. I can't, your sport really elevates in terms of their leading cards. Like your star women combatants are the ones who are headlining cards. And it's besides tennis, I can't think of any other sports where the women actually are the headliners sometimes in a card.
Yeah, no, you know, the female athletes are incredible. I mean, you know, in my personal experience, and I go to a lot of fights, I mean, it just feels like the women fight harder. The fights are, you know, in general, you know, more exciting. You know, the other thing we're incredibly proud of when it comes to female, you know, in the UFC is we've treated women exactly the way we've treated men from day one. So unlike you mentioned tennis, and I agree, you know, women's tennis is excellent, absolutely on par with men's tennis, if not better. It took decades and decades for Wimbledon and the U.S. Open and the French Open and all the majors, in addition to, you know, the tours, to pay women the same as men. We're incredibly proud of the fact that we played women exactly the same amount and as men from day one. In fact, you mentioned Ronda Rousey. For many years, Ronda Rousey was the highest paid athlete, not highest paid female athlete, but the highest paid athlete in the UFC. And that's because, you know, we didn't view her through any lens that was different than the way we viewed men.
And, you know, I listened to how you talk and I listened to Dana talk about boxing. You know, that's the one topic people bring boxing. Well, boxing is this problem and that problem and this problem. But, you know, you guys just put your heads down and say, we're just going to do UFC. We're going to put on a great event. And if boxing wants to do what they want to do, that's fine. But we're just going to put on these great events. And I think that, you know, boxing, it seems like can do, you know, there's nobody in charge and all the problems people talk about. But I think that's the one thing that you guys have sort of differentiated yourself from boxing in terms of the fact is that you're just the laser focus on just putting on better events than just having, you know, boxing's problem was like, you know, put one big headline event and then having no other card. You've just done everything better, I think.
Listen, I mean, you know, a lot of times people sort of pitch this, you know, UFC versus, you know, boxing sort of narrative. And we've never thought about it that way. You know, all of us, you know, including myself, huge boxing fans, you know, grew up in Vegas. It was our only professional sport. I've always enjoyed it. But, you know, as we grew the UFC, you know, we absolutely looked at what boxing had done well and what they hadn't done well. And the things that they hadn't done well at were, first of all, they never built a brand. They never built a brand. I mean, you know, brands are so important in today's, you know, society. People understand brands. They appreciate brands. They rally behind brands. And boxing, it just had never done that. No one would go see a top-ranked fighter or Don King fight. They'd go see fighter A versus fighter B. So we felt like, you know, we had to build a brand. And of course we did. You know, the second thing, and this is something that, you know, I think takes a lot of discipline, is that we never operated this business fight to fight to fight. And I think that's, you know, one thing that boxing has done is that, you know, they try to maximize value on the fight. You know, they don't care about what happens, you know, the next day. You know, it's sort of like a going out of business sale. You know, you try to maximize revenues, and then Sunday morning the flyers are blown around in the wind and there's no one there. You know, we always had a long-term mindset of how to build a sport and how to, you know, figure out ways to, you know, they said, continually enhance the overall ecosystem. And I think that sort of that long-term thinking is something we didn't see in boxing, but something we really leaned into. And it's meant everything, because, you know, when you think about a business in 10 or 20 year blocks, you really operate, you know, very differently than if you're just thinking about how do I maximize value on tonight's fight. And so those are the two big things. There were other things that we did differently from boxing, but, you know, I don't think it's ever been us versus them. I mean, you know, they have a great sport, and they have in many ways a loyal fan base. I think, you know, frankly, our product's just, you know, excellent. And I think people that are interested in combat sports, especially people that are younger, just tend to prefer our product to theirs.
Right. And down here in Miami, which has, you know, this great boxing history. So it's pretty cool that it's now switched over from boxing to UFC. But also, you talked about in terms of branding and the continuous side, you see with the NFL, you see it with the NBA, you know, TNT saying what events are going to be on ESPN, and the NFL, every network saying, you know, there's other games on. It's like they don't just say, oh, we're only going to watch an NFL game on CBS. Don't watch it anywhere else. Now you've done such a great job in the media rights deal. Now with ESPN, just pushing and pushing the different events. I think that's really helped in terms of, you know, all your deals, the Fox deal, now the ESPN deal, where you actually lead and we're watching an event and you're pushing the next event and the next event after that.
Yeah, you know, listen, our relationship with ESPN has been absolutely transformative. You know, certainly the marketing support they've given us as an anchor to the ESPN Plus streaming service has been, you know, just incredible for the brand. You know, the stuff they've done is, as far as exposing us just to more and more sports fans with what we get on the ESPN linear channel. I mean, love the relationship with Fox, great guys. You know, they took us to a new level also, but, you know, when your lead in is Duke, North Carolina, and there's several million people coming, you know, from that game and then being hand delivered to a UFC, you know, fight night. I mean, that's really impactful. That's really impactful to growing your fan base. So we've really loved, you know, this relationship with ESPN. They couldn't be a better partner. But, you know, on the media side, you know, the other stuff that we've done, which is truly innovative and has been key to us continuing to grow our fan base, is, you know, what we've done on social media. I mean, Dana White, you know, is just, you know, there's no other way to describe it other than a genius when it comes to this stuff. I mean, he is literally just on the cutting edge of what's going on in the world of social media. He's figured out how to connect with, you know, some of the biggest influencers on the planet, and influencers that really can drive people to UFC and create interest in UFC. So in addition to all the great stuff that we've done with ESPN and ESPN Plus, and frankly, broadcast partners around the world, what Dana has done to sort of, you know, figure out a way to marshal the forces of social media, and, you know, to create an incredible social media platform himself. I mean, just the Dana White platform, you know, is incredible. Combine that with what we've done on UFC and then all the influencers that Dana's networked with. You know, it's a really powerful engine to expose people to the UFC product, to get our existing fan base excited about upcoming events. And I think that's a real differentiator for us at the UFC.
And I love talking about the business side of sports. Of course, on Iron Sports, we're talking to Lawrence Epstein, the chief operating officer of the UFC. But you went through in 2016, you sold to Endeavor, which at that time was the largest sports deal for $4 billion ever. And then you then had the merger with the WWE and had that change. And it hasn't affected it. Some of these, you know, sometimes sports teams are sold and it's a negative effect. There's change and those things. But it seems like every time you've made this, you've actually, now you've stayed on both of these changes, which is great. You and Dana both. But I think that's what's pretty cool, that you've had the sale and then now you've had a merger and you still just keep going strong with that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the two transactions you mentioned have been, you know, really positive for our organization. But, you know, the main thing is we gained an incredible partner in Ari Emanuel, people like Mark Shapiro and so many others that you know, initially the Endeavor organization and now our parent TKO are part of. You know, we're really proud of what we were able to build and the success that we had up through that August 2016 sale. But once Endeavor, you know, took us over, We just frankly got a bunch more tools. We got a bunch more relationships. We got a bunch more assets to help us grow the business. And, you know, the results speak for themselves. You know, we've doubled the business since 2016 or more. And of course, this new combination with WWE and the formation of TKO is only 5 or 6 months old right now. But we've already had, you know, some amazing progress of putting these two great content creators together in many ways. Listen, we're going to be respectful of the existing fan bases, and, you know, we're going to continue to operate, you know, much of the businesses separately. But we're looking for these opportunities where we can work together to create not just efficiencies, because that's always the easy part, but the synergies that, you know, help both of us, you know, grow our businesses. So bottom line is, you know, Ari and Mark Shapiro and the everybody over TKO, they let us do what we do best, is, you know, put on the best fights in the world. And they just provide us that tremendous resources to help us, you know, to grow the business.
And, you know, not only to put on the good fights, you need people who are in shape and who are really doing well. And you opened this amazing training center that is state-of-the-art in Vegas and doing all that in terms of fighters to come in there and train and get them ready. It rivals any NFL team or any pro sports. And I think that's something that helps in terms of you're really helping these fighters develop into the best that they possibly can be.
Yeah, you know, we opened the first Performance Institute, gosh, I think it's 6 years ago now, almost 6 years ago. And, you know, it was born out of this desire to try to help our athletes, you know, perform better and to help them train safer, to avoid injuries, to, of course, help them recover from injury. Because sports always produce injuries. We also wanted to provide, you know, services to help them because, of course, our athletes have to make a weight to compete. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to provide, you know, scientifically based nutritional services. You know, we opened this, you know, 6 or so years ago. The results with respect to our athletes, you know, recovering from injury, training safer, you know, the number of athletes that miss events due to sickness or due to, you know, weight cut misses have dramatically, I think they're down like 90%. I mean, just a really dramatic change. So, you know, there's been this, you know, incredible, you know, business case for this investment that we made. We've helped our athletes make more money because they're recovering faster. They're not getting injured as much. They're not missing due to weight related issues. And then we opened, you know, one in China, which did all the stuff that I just mentioned, but also focused on, you know, sort of turbocharging talent development in that market. And the results there have been incredible. Of course, as you know, we've got a Chinese champion, Wei Li Zhang. We've got lots of up and coming Chinese athletes. And I'm proud to say that just last week, we opened a third Performance Institute in Mexico City. And it will be fully operational in just a few weeks. And the goal, much like China, will be to do all the stuff that we're doing in Vegas, but also focus on talent development. Of course, with respect to Mexico, but frankly, it's going to be a center for all of Latin America.
You know, I grew up in central Pennsylvania, which is the heart of wrestling in many ways, and certainly near Penn State. And you see it in for collegiate wrestling, high school wrestling, scholastic. You know, a few years ago, people thought that wrestling was going to, you know, die out. Those are the sports that are going to get cut. And if anyone goes to a Penn State wrestling match, they'll see the excitement, you know, and everything with that. Do you feel that it's, and I know you sit on the board of Vanderbilt, and that have you seen that in colleges now, trying to embrace it in the collegiate level? Because now there is a pathway. If you're a wrestler, you're successful. Look, I can go to WWE, I can go to UFC. There's ways that I can get out and make money just by being a wrestler, which there really wasn't opportunities before.
Well, you mentioned Penn State, and of course, you know, Bo Nickel, who's a UFC fighter, actually be fighting on the main card of UFC 300. And this guy's turned into a breakout star. He's only got a handful or so fights, but he's an incredible athlete. Was a dominant college wrestler, and now he's sort of layered on, you know, some of the other skills needed to compete in mixed martial arts. So, you know, you said it. I mean, this is a real outlet for college wrestlers. And listen, it's always been, you know, we've always had a significant amount of our fighter population that, you know, began their athletic careers in wrestling, whether it's freestyle, Greco-Roman, you know, and many of them were collegiate wrestlers. So, you know, the combination with WWE also, you know, creates another interesting outlet for some of these athletes. So, you know, as I said, I think it's great for college wrestling programs around the United States. We've always been a big supporter of college wrestling. You know, we've actually done NIL deals with some athletes in the past. And, you know, we've been supportive of not just college wrestling, but also sort of the Olympic wrestling movement also. So, yeah, I mean, this is great opportunities for all those athletes in both UFC and WWE.
Yeah, well, remember like when Sugar Ray Leonard won the Olympics, and then there's that whole those play, you know, it just transitioned right into boxing. I think that's when, you know, boxing, the Olympics struggling has actually hurt boxing professionally, because you don't see these Olympic stars then going to the next level. But I just talk a little bit more, just to finish the interview a little bit, about this match, UFC 299, O'Malley Vera 2. Sean O'Malley is interesting. He's flamboyant. He wears the fancy hair. He's all that. And he also can wrestle, he's great mixed martial artist at the same time. And this is a really good chance. I'm intrigued by this, because Vera beat him before when they weren't champions. And now this is, you know, in Vera's mind is like, I could be the champions. I beat the champion already. So I like this match. I think it has a lot of interest, because Vera's confident, saying, look, why should I not feel I'm the favorite? I beat him already.
Yeah, no, you nailed it. I mean, once you beat somebody, there's a certain level of confidence that you can do it again. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, one of the many reasons why this O'Malley Vera fight is really interesting. You know, second thing is, these guys are both really fun, exciting fighters. I mean, you can be a great personality and have a great swagger and a great look, but if you do not perform in the octagon, you know, it doesn't really matter. And both of these athletes do. You know, O'Malley is just a breakout star. And he's really, really thoughtful and smart about how he has sort of built his fan base. He's done it, you know, I think his way, like all great, you know, I think iconic athletes do. You know, they have their own sort of mindset and how they do things, and it's unique to them. And he's, you know, he's done it. I mean, he's got the look, he's got the swagger, you know, he's got the great name, Sugar Sean, and he's just, He's no doubt a very, very special guy, you know, and he wins in very, very dramatic fashion. He's done that since the beginning, you know, of his career, even before he, you know, set the UFC on fire when he was successful in Dana White's Contender Series and made his entree to the UFC via that show. So, you know, very, very excited about that. And, you know, I talked about social media previously. I mean, Sean has been just a master at developing a social media presence and a following. And, you know, listen, he creates good content. He's an interesting character. He's got a really strong, loyal, and very diverse fan base. I mean, that's one of the things that I think has really helped Sean, you know, grow his brand and his popularity, is that people from all different places, locations, ethnic backgrounds, they identify with this guy. And as a result, he's got this big, you know, diverse fan base that, you know, is pumped to see him compete on March 9th in Miami.
Well, I'm so excited about UFC 299. I'll be there. I mean, if you can, you know, certainly I think you're sold out, but if you get tickets, you should definitely go there. But also from the viewership, it's a great event to watch. And it's one of those things you know, don't just turn on the final event. You're going to have 4, 5, 6 good matches go leading up to it. So I'm pumped for UFC 299. I think it's great for Miami, great for the area, and I'm really excited about it.
Awesome. Well, listen, we're really excited about getting down there, and you're absolutely right. Just on the card, I mean, the prelims are incredible too. You know, just some amazing, you know, I mean, Rafael Dos Anjos, a UFC legend in lightweight bout on the prelims. I mean, you know, Macy Barber in a great fight in the prelims, and then, you know, a heavyweight match, with Curtis Blaydes and Almeida. So, I mean, the card is stacked from top to bottom. You know, if you're going to the fight, get there early, because there's going to be, you know, a lot of fun from the moment the fights start.
Lawrence, thanks so much for coming on Iron Sports. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you next weekend then. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.